Hey, Johnny.
Hey, what's up, dude?
Hey, how you doing, man?
I'm doing good. Just chilling. Got home from work.
Oh, yeah. I know what it's like.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm just a journalist, and you happen to be a musician.
Yeah, that's the big thing about it. Gotta keep it funny somehow, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely an even balance. I mean, I went from one night, I called out of work to go see Pentagram and meet Bobby and, you know, that whole experience. And the next day I'm washing dishes with a hangover and a goose egg on my forehead because I started a mosh pit. I started a mosh pit and collided head first into some other kid's forehead. And then I just kind of wobbled over and finished my PBR and watched the rest of the show like a normal person.
Punk rock, right?
Oh, it was a doom metal show. That's what's funny. So, but yeah, it had the same kind of ethos. So, I mean,
exactly.
It's underground. I first did that shit literally like when I was 18, so 10 years ago. I was running around Philly with a turquoise mohawk and tight red plaid pants, so I know all about it.
Oh, hell yeah. I was in there about that probably 10 years ago.
Yeah. So, first of all, I don't know if this is the first interview you've actually done with anyone, but...
It is.
Oh, well then, all right. Tell us about Siddhartha, where you're from, and how you came together. Tell us about the beginnings, your influences. Give us the whole spiel, man.
Oh, wow. Okay. Well, Siddhartha itself, I guess, started in 2011. Actually, under the name Ilvane at that point in time, went through the whole, like, you know, constant revolving door band members and all that kind of stuff. Changed the name in, like, I think it was like 2012 or 13 to Harsh Realm for a while. There's another band in this area named that, so we had to change the name again and came to Siddhartha. And that's been was an off and on thing for a while. Had a couple of members, like, actually friends of mine, Eddie and Randy, they played on our first EP on Enlighten Me.
Gotcha.
And that was like the start of Siddhartha itself at that point. That lasted for a while, but then, you know, things had a change. You had other things to do around that nature. And a couple of years, it was kind of like, I guess, you know, kind of chill around that nature, chill and then Mellow. And with Mellow eventually came Manny, and yeah, that's a whole other story.
Yeah.
And here we are now, like, you know, like, ever since me and Bella got together, like, you know, things have been great. Like, you know, we work perfectly together, write songs perfectly together, like, yeah.
Obviously when I heard Eden, like, you guys definitely, out of everybody that's trying to do it, mainstream-wise, like, you guys actually sound more pure to the heart of what the genre's supposed to be. And,
Well, thank you.
Just your development from Heavy Sound Damage to, growth is just incredible. Which, I mean, I'd have to say that's probably my favorite release of yours, actually, so far, is Growth, to be honest.
That's cool. I appreciate that, man. Thank you.
But, We'll keep Manny a mystery. Let's create a little mystery about Manny there.
Yeah, well, Manny is a mystery, even to us.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's Manny.
He could be Austin Powers, the international man of mystery. Who knows?
Yeah. Oh, man, it's ridiculous.
So, like, what are your influences as a band? Like...
Oh, wow. We are... pretty much all across the board, really, like, I mean, of course, you know, we have our, you know, quote-unquote grunge influences, you know, like, you know, heavily, obviously, you know, luckily you'll sound like Nirvana, but you definitely hear Nirvana's influence in us, you know, we have Love Battery, you know, they definitely influenced our, like, kind of that psychedelic vibe.
I caught that for sure.
Definitely, the heaviness, you know, a lot of times, bands like Tad and Grunt Truck and all that with the heaviness and, you know, Melvin's in there as well.
There's a bit of Alice in Chains sometimes in your stuff, at least to me, at least in the vibes.
Oh,
like the softer stuff especially. You know what I mean?
Sorry, I couldn't understand you.
No, I said in a lot of the softer stuff, like this, I hear a lot of Alice in Chains in there too.
Oh yeah, Alice in Chains, Soundgarden, heavy influence, like a lot of the tone and the vibes.
Yeah.
What had going on.
You have the punk elements that Nirvana and Mudhoney had, but you have the metal crunchiness of the others.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like that's the other part of it too. Like I personally got into the whole grunge thing out of punk. Like, I was heavily into, like, hardcore punk and street punk and all kind of stuff. Like,
the weird thing is,
I
got into, like, Nirvana and stuff like that at the same time I was getting into, like, the Sex Pistols and the Misfits and the Dead Kennedys.
Yeah, pretty much. And the funny thing about that is that, actually, I got into Nirvana, like, out of, like, being into punk or that. I got into them because I looked up their influences and saw that they had loved a lot of the same bands I love. Because I got to be more interested in them and more wanting to, hear what, go deeper. And from there, I just went crazy. Like, after I got really into Nirvana, I started getting into all the other bands, and it became this giant...
There's a lot of really, really good bands from that scene that nobody fucking knows.
Exactly.
The 64 Spiders, dude. I mean...
What?
The 64 Spiders are fucking amazing.
Oh, yeah.
Dead Moon. I showed you Gnome, didn't I?
I think you showed me the Spiders, like, the 69 Spiders. I think you definitely showed me them.
Yeah. Gnome, I don't even know what happened to them, where they've been. I would love to get in contact with them, but they were really fucking good, and nobody, I don't know.
Yeah, that's the thing, that there's a lot of great bands from that era that didn't get much attention, like a couple favorites of mine that...
I had to go out of my way to get the Hype soundtrack just to get a lot of the bands that were on that recording. The Sub Pop 200 collection is definitely a must-have for anybody who's seriously into it. I love that Beat Happening song on that compilation.
Going the classic, even before that, the Beat Six compilation, before Sub Pop and all that, like hearing like the beginning of that.
Yeah,
like
hearing the Deep Six, even. I love that record.
Exactly.
I mean, fucking Green River were great. Like,
oh yeah.
I hear a lot of different stuff in your music from all of that, which is really good.
We're actually even more than that. We're get into. Stuff like stuff like bands like I'm not sure you've heard of Beast Wars or not, but they're like pretty big influence on me. And I love a lot of their shit. That's some little bit of like sleep and like earth kind of stuff, like the stoner kind of stuff.
Yeah, and it's funny because even
even
Jack and Dino even said that he never saw a big difference between what was grunge rock and what was stoner rock or stoner metal. I mean, there's parts of Mudhoney's latest EP that I'm like, damn, that sounds doomy.
Yeah. That's the crazy thing about it, man. What the grunge kind of thing. That's the thing about grunge. So there's no real definition to it. Every band sounds different. You can't really pigeonhole it. And I think that's what happened, really, at least as far as, the mainstream thing. But what happened with that was, once they... tried to label it killed it.
That's why the punk scene ended up the way it did from the first wave and almost every other wave since then. That's why grunge imploded on itself as well. All the really big players of that era, other than Mudhoney and Mark Lanegan, are pretty much dead.
Pretty much. I mean,
the guy from Dead Moon died a year ago. The lead singer and lead guitarist for Dead Moon actually passed away a year ago. Chris Cornell, that one caught me by surprise, actually, if I'm honest.
Yeah, another sad one, too, was Dave McMillan from both Grunge Rock and Skinner.
Yeah, Scott Weiland.
Yeah, of course.
I really feel some type of way that nobody really mourned Scott Weiland the way they mourned Prince. People are like, I don't even know who he is. Do you live under a fucking rock? Because they're played on classic rock stations.
Yeah. Oh, man. But yeah, like, that's the thing. Like, thinking about, like, that and everything.
That's why I'm kind of glad that there's nothing that they could commercialize out of the stoner metal kind of scene, really,
yeah,
if you think about
it. Like, with like stoner and with like sludge and all that kind of stuff, I mean, whereas it's really heavy and hard-hitting and good, it's like...
If you're into sludge, are you familiar with I Hate God? I can tell you're in the South.
Yeah, I know them, yes.
Okay, yeah, I was making sure. They're fucking incredible. They're so fucking nihilistic and so fucking bombastic and just,
yeah,
wow.
That's the thing.
The first song I heard by them was My Name Is God, I Hate You, which isn't a good song to try to get into them your first try. When I first started doing record reviews, I started out, you know, a decade ago almost now, literally, on doommetal.com, and the second or third record they sent me to review ever was a record by a band called Thou, which I'll send you the first track from that record, because I remember it, because at the time, I had never heard anything in my life like this record. And I told them, you have to give me some time to properly absorb this, because there's so much going on. I've never heard anything like this. And I had come from a hardcore punk background. I had been into black metal and everything else, but this was one record that I had to listen to over and over again. Do I like this? Yes, I do.
There's
just certain... That's how you know that even as a seasoned music fan, because even then I could go from, like, Bob Dylan or the Beatles to Slayer with the drop of a dime and no pause or even second thought about it. But to hear a record that mind blew me like that, I was just like, okay, this is definitely more extreme of a genre than Sabbath worship. This is... Wow.
Definitely. It's just like...
That was before I discovered Electric Wizard.
Oh, yeah.
And that's what's crazy. When you hear what this record was like, try to picture just knowing Doom from, like, St. Vitus and the Obsessed and more the traditional Doom bands, not knowing Sludge or anything else yet.
Right. Goddamn, man.
but being into the genres that... All the different genres I always search for the underground because that's all that really matters. There's no authenticity in anything that's commercial anymore.
And these days, that's the sad thing. Like, I mean,
you've got Five Finger Gong Punchers. Heavy metal right now is Avenged Sevenfold and Five Finger Donkey Punch.
Oh. Yeah, pretty much.
And that's just like. What happened to having a rawness to anything, including heavy metal? Like, it's not supposed to be so cleanly polished. That's like if somebody said Nickelback's my favorite grunge band, you want to punch him in the fucking face. Right?
Yeah. Like, it's like, okay, hold on.
They're doing to metal what Nickelback did to alternative rock.
Right.
When you listen to, like... Avenged Sevenfold, that guy can play guitar, but I hate the sound of the singer's voice, and I hate how it's all butchered Metallica riffs, and it's so clean and pristine and shiny, and it's a turd.
That's the thing. That's just actually, it's, you know...
The singer's voice just drives me up a wall. It sounds so whiny for metal.
Yeah, definitely. That's pretty much what Siddhartha really is. It's about in that context. It's kind of like a move away from that whole concept, in my opinion. Like, kind of like taking, like this is the modern perspective of everything. Everything's so clean, so polished.
You're doing the same thing Varg Vikernes did for Burzum in the early days by trying to go for a purposely quote unquote shitty sounding record.
Right.
That's what Varg was doing in the early Burzum days.
Yeah. Definitely in the case of fucking shitty, but not perfect. I don't want to sound perfectly polished and clean ever. I wanted to make sure that, you know, it's good, that it sounds good, but it's, like, not perfect. Like, I don't want that human element to remain in there. That's what, you know, really well about. And, like, you know, making sure that, you know, it's always authentic. It's always honest. It's always real. And this is us, and we're not trying to be anything else.
Yeah,
you know?
Which is the essential rock and roll philosophy, which dates back to the beginning, you know.
Exactly, and that's the big thing. It's like, you're, you know, what you're saying about there is right. You know, like, you know, a lot of things you hear as far as mainstream stuff goes these days is that it's all become so perfect, and
yeah.
I feel like that needs to change.
That's part of the reason why I listen to so much stuff by, like, Bob Dylan and, like, the old folk singers like Woody Guthrie and the old blues guys. You listen to those records and they're so raw, but they're so full of character and personality and attitude.
Oh, yeah. Like, especially that point, like, you think about, you know, that era.
You even go from, like, Robert Johnson to, like, John Lee Hooker, and it's still got that raw quality. Robert Johnson, that man, ugh. I don't know if you watched the documentary they did on Netflix of the little bit of known information they could piece together, but, man.
Which documentary?
The Robert Johnson one that was done on Netflix a few months back.
Oh, man, I haven't watched that yet, no.
I don't know if it's still on there or not. It's literally right underneath an hour long, so it's not super long, but.
Okay.
Yeah.
They had to compile, like, a, you know, so much information they didn't have at all.
it's mostly people that knew him and his offspring, or his, you know, living relatives that had the stories passed down. That, actually, the blues scene down in the South back then was actually what started the whole idea of the devil being in rock and roll music. It started with blues guys like Robert Johnson. He was denied access to his own children because the mom and woman's parents didn't like the fact that the father of their grandchildren was going around in juke joints playing the devil's music and drinking liquor instead of going to church.
Damn.
They were spending money Saturday nights at juke joints drinking and listening to this blues music, and they weren't going to church on Sunday because they were hungover. So that caused a problem. So that kind of started, that's where it dates back to, actually.
Oh, wow.
Crazy.
Oh, wow.
Isn't it?
Actually, I wasn't aware of that. But I think actually that history is pretty, that's, wow.
Yeah.
That actually makes a lot of sense, too, only how it, you know, kind of started from that, like that whole concept of, you know, how, you know.
But think about, like, how long ago that was. Robert Johnson died in the late 30s, if I recall correctly, which I can't remember right off the top of my head at the moment. But when you think about how long ago that started and how that myth is still being perpetuated, it's absolutely hilarious to me. Yeah, I mean, that's the farthest back I could trace it. You could even go back to jazz. You know, they, anything
that, you know, hearing about jazz, like, during that point in time, like, what's going on, you know, with what you're saying about it, it's kind of crazy how later on it became such a, like, American staple and everything like that, like, you know, but, like, then, back in, like, in the day when it was really coming out, like, they were, it was like, I think it was with everything. I didn't even know it was in the backlash to it.
I lived with foster parents who were convinced that Kiss meant Knights in Satan's Service and that Motley Crue were devil worshippers, which, I mean, I literally was ostracized and told that I was, they could see demons fighting for my soul in my eyes, and I asked them, what are you on, because I'll take two. So you can see why that, yeah.
Documentary I was watching, it had Kim Dale from Soundgarden or whatever. He was they were talking about them, like, you know, the whole, like, a lot of the hair metal band.
Yeah.
It's like kind of like laughing. He was like there was a part of the guitar with fuzzy guitar.
I like a lot of the hair bands, but there's also a lot that I don't like. I draw the line at Poison. That's probably as light as I go, and that's just because my upbringing and. You could say what you want, but I view Poison as kind of more of a pop-punk band with really flashy guitar solos, which is more on the money if you really think about it. Talk Dirty to Me has almost the same guitar line as God Save the Queen. And they used to cover that in their club days.
Yeah, I remember. It
has that do 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 do. It has that same kind of. I drew the line one day when I heard it on the radio, and I didn't really bother to listen to that song out of choice. It just happened to come on the radio. And I was listening to the Sex Pistols, like, the day before, and I was like, oh my god. So I was picturing Johnny Rotten singing Talk Dirty to Me in my head, and I was laughing hysterically in the car.
Oh my god.
I literally was laughing out loud about picturing Johnny Rotten doing that, and it just killed me.
Oh man, like it kind of reminds me a bit of, like, a few years ago, I was watching the movie of Watchmen, whatever, and the very, very end of that, this is a song by, I think it was Michael Romatch, whatever, and the guitar riff sounded just like the guitar riff from, Anarchy UK. With a certain part to it. I was like, that was totally ripped out of Anarchy UK, what the hell?
Yeah, like
stuff like that. Like, when you hear that kind of thing, it's like,
wait a second, ding, ding, ding. But for me, it was two songs that I've listened to for years, and I just drew the connection in the car that day, and it just, I couldn't help it.
It's always funny. I mean, I'm pretty sure people felt the same way when you first heard, like, Teen Spirit, and, like, wait a second, that sounds like the same riff for more than a feeling.
Yeah, and the fact that, it's funny because when Nirvana played Reading Festival in 92, that day that they played that show, I turned a year old.
wait, what?
August 30th, 92. I was born August 30th, 91.
Oh, wow.
So that's one cool thing that happened on one of my birthdays. John Lennon played one of his last live performances in New York City in 72 on August 30th as well. But,
Oh, shit.
Yeah. Nothing else really cool happened. What's really interesting is because of my birthday, I'm the same star sign as both Rob Halford from Judas Priest and Gene Simmons from Kiss.
Damn.
Which, when you think about the fact that both Gene Simmons and Rob Halford are in the same kind of business, but two totally opposite types of people, morally and everything, you know? It's like, okay, so I am either Gene Simmons or I'm Rob Halford, and I don't have money, so, like, what, you know, white magic, black magic, which one do I choose?
Oh my god. In that case, man, like, you're talking about that, like, the signs, and, like, you know, birthdays, and, like, that kind of thing, and being strangely coincidental points in your own life and what you're into.
Yeah.
Like, my birthday is February 24th. 1987, which is exactly 20 years and 4 days after Kurtz.
Which is crazy.
My feast and everything like that, which is pretty weird. And I found out later on, actually, like a few years ago, I found out that Kurt and Courtney's wedding day was on my, it was in 92, that was my fifth birthday.
Oh, that's cool as shit.
Yeah, they were married on my fifth birthday.
But they played one of their best shows on my birthday, so I can't complain. On my first birthday, they played one of their best shows.
Oh, damn. Dude.
Well, the Reading Festival of 92, most people will admit that that's one of their best shows that they played.
Yeah.
Even Kurt said he would give it, like, a 9 out of 10.
Which one was that again?
That was the second Reading Festival in 92. When he came up on stage first, looking like he was sick and pale and shit, because he had recently OD'd.
That was on your birthday?
August 30th, 92. I was born August 30th, 91.
That's on your first birthday, dude.
Yes.
Very nice.
Yeah. I think that was the first time they played Tourette's live, too. So, that's actually quite funny. Because that's one of my favorite ones to play on the guitar. Because it's just so fun. I still to this day don't know exactly what the hell he's singing.
Wait, which one?
Tourette's.
Oh, sorry, I didn't understand that.
Tourette's.
Oh, Tourette's. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I can't really quite make it out. I know, I mean, I hear, you know, like, the thing, like, something about my heart, like, repeated in that, like...
Yeah, and something heart, schizophrenic, like, and then, like, hey! It's just, like, an obnoxiously brash, quick, fucking, just burst of angst, which I love.
Exactly. It's just, like, just stuff like that in general. Like, I mean, same with, like, in that case with, when you get the story of the recording of an Endless Nameless, whatever, like, how
yeah.
He, like, let that shit out of frustration. And
he actually literally smashed his guitar on the control booth.
Yeah. It's like, dude, like, you're feeling some shit, like, seriously.
I always tell people, because, like, people will like punk or they'll like metal, but for some reason, a lot of people still have something against grunge. I'm like, why? It's the old school 70s punk energy with the old school 70s hard rock heavy metal riffage style. What
exactly.
More could you ask for?
It's throwing some like psychedelic, like almost like tones to that whole thing. And it's like,
yeah.
That's
I mean, Mudhoney literally sound like a heavier version of the Stooges. And that's not an insult, and I don't think they would take it as that. That's, I mean, and they've kept that same consistent style. That really trippy, weird fucking garage punk.
Exactly. And that was, you know, that's the beautiful thing about Mudhoney. Like, I mean, she did Green River. Like, you know, there was very similar to that, too, in the whole thing.
Yeah, it's like, funny. I keep trying to tell my wife that Green River consisted of Mudhoney and Pearl Jam, but the guys in Pearl Jam were more on the glammy side, so...
Mm-hmm.
And Alice in Chains started out as a hair metal band. On both sides. Not just Lane, but Jerry's, you know... They even said in interviews, we were really into hair metal and stuff like that, but we were also really into what was going on in Seattle. So,
yep.
I mean,
like,
as much as hair metal is hated, it's also still a part of that history, ironically.
Yeah.
The whole
like,
scene would have been different had Mother Love Bone actually made it farther than
yeah.
The dead. Like, literally.
Yeah,
it makes me wonder if something like fate really does exist, if certain things are really meant to happen, because what other reason is there, man?
Yeah, I mean, I'm a firm believer in that. Everything happens for a reason.
I mean,
like,
that was so
definitely.
Sad, but Nirvana wouldn't have been what they were had Mother Love Bone been the first band to break.
Yeah, that's the thing. You know, of course, you know, like, you know, you would have died and we did, especially when it's really, you know, fucked up and everything like that. But, like, of course, you know, without that, we wouldn't have Pearl Jam, which I, you know,
yeah,
so
program's great. I'm not bashing them by saying that. It's just people need to remember
yeah.
That the roots start out in the pop metal area.
Yeah.
So that's probably why they got more flack than Nirvana did.
Yeah, that's the big thing with that. Like, I mean, that's the sad thing, too. Like,
and Alice in Chains were marketed as the next Helix at the time.
The next what?
They were marketed as, like, the next Helix.
Really?
Yeah, they were on the metal circuit. They were marketed as a metal band. They were put on the metal circuit.
Well, I can definitely believe that. But it's like, I guess it was still with Soundgarden, too, weren't they?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Soundgarden, yeah, they were like... Chris Cornell even said in an interview way back in 97, he's like, out of fucking nowhere, nobody knows what we're about or where we're coming from.
Yeah.
So...
Well, that's just the thing, with, especially at that point in time, you know, in Seattle, it's totally different. Like the punks and the metalheads get along there a lot better.
Yeah.
The outside of that, like you had, when Alice in Chains, they got into punk, and the whole Seattle thing was out of time because they were in the practice space with, I think it was Human.
Yeah.
And then got them turned on to, you know, everything else going on, and that's when they started to change their sound, started becoming more doing that.
Yeah.
Whatever, I introduced them, especially Lane, because he, like, got really into a lot of that shit. And that kind of, like, turned them on to, you know, that whole sound, and it became that, you know, that dark, like, heavy, but still simplistic. It was, like, you know, very different than, of course, any metal going on at the time, but, like,
yeah.
The fact that they were, you know, marketed that way, and, you know, trying to get in that way, is like, wow.
Yeah, I mean, and the fact that, like, I'm not just... I'm very hard to please as a music fan, and my wife or anybody else will tell you the same exact thing. I am very hard to please, but I'm very happy that there's a band like yours out there still. A new band playing this style of music when there aren't really a lot of those original bands around. You know, it's definitely, I feel like it's something that, a gap that needs to be filled. I mean, you know, I just saw Alice in Chains and Korn, and I was really there for Alice in Chains, to be completely honest. And they've still got it, despite the fact that Lane's not there. That a band's original spirit is still there. But to have someone like you, a young and hungry band, like, that obviously makes more of an impression than someone who's, you know, cemented in the legacy, so to speak. You're bringing it back to a street level. And I really, really hope that I can in some way help you get more this way, because I'd really like to see you guys live.
Well, dude, that means a whole lot. And, like, I mean, you really do help, like, one way or another, man. Like, you know, the reviews and this interview.
Because I don't know the numbers. Only you would know that if I have no idea what I do, who it reaches, how many people it reaches, but, I mean, I've got to have some kind of pool. I don't even understand this. I'm still a bit starstruck. Yesterday, I was on the phone with Victor Griffin, who played on every Pentagram record but three. You know, it's like, meeting Bobby was fucking insane. You know,
yeah.
I'm still like, I don't understand, because I've been doing this 10 years not getting anything, and like, now I'm getting everything all at once. It's like, it's like, whoa.
Well, that's the good thing, man. Like, you know, it takes work, you know, it takes dedication, and, you know, you definitely have that, so you're deemed there, and that's really fucking good.
I mean, that's the way it works. It's not easy, man.
Yeah. I've been doing this, like, this band itself, like, you know, all of those different name changes since 2011, and, like, you know, just now, we're in a real way, whatever, like that. The thing I definitely say real quick, too, is that we're not the only ones. Like, that's the good thing about it, is that there's a couple other bands out there.
Yeah, I'm not trying to divulge details, but there are a few people you mentioned that I have talked to. I just have a to-do list that I just need to get through each item, and I've gotten through a few of the big ones now, so I'm starting to get down to where I need to be, but I will get to them as well, because, well, if I'm really into grunge and looking for new bands that are worth a shit, then there's gotta be other people, so, and that's what it's all about.
Yeah.
I mean,
we're definitely out there.
And the fact that it's underground makes it okay. I mean, the Stoner Doom thing, like I said, the great thing about that is it's been going on for like 50 fucking years next year, because Pentagram was the first, unless you count Black Sabbath, but Pentagram was the first real street level one, and they've been doing it since 71. So,
yeah.
I mean, if it's not mainstream by this point, it's not going to be.
Most likely.
And the fact that there's a band out of Yonkers called Pitch Black Sunrise that have they're stoner rock, but they have a very strong Alice in Chains Soundgarden vibe to them as well.
Oh, cool. That's
and,
very cool.
Like, you know, they're fantastic, and they're a power trio as well.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. The bass player is actually a paramedic, too, down there in Yonkers.
Well, that's pretty cool.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's that. But, I mean, the fact that if you guys, if I could get them and you guys, like, I tried asking the venue that I saw Pentagram at about getting Pitch Black Sunrise a show, and I haven't got a response yet, so I don't know. But if I could get you guys on a bill with them, you guys would be a great bill, you know.
Oh, my God. That would be amazing,
but,
make that happen.
Like I said, I can't make that happen, because you'd have to travel all this way and maybe make $30.
Look, dude, like, all music, one line for free, whatever, like, seriously, personally, it's not about the money to me. Like, of course, it's good to have the money to in order to tour and actually be able to go out and play, like, more often on that thing, yes, but...
I just don't have, like, I don't know the right people, I guess, but I'm sure if I sniffed around enough, I could get somewhere, but if I could do that for you, I would in a heartbeat.
If you were able to make it happen, I'd totally be down. You know, we'd make it happen, one way or another. I would, you know, even if I funded it myself, I'd make it happen.
And unfortunately, you know, there's only so much I can do. I share everything and, you know, but... At the end of the day, you know, at least you know that there's people out there who are really into your shit.
And I really appreciate that. And everything you do, like, you know, this is like this the thing. You may see it as a little, but to me, it's huge. Like, everything you do, I appreciate it a lot.
Like, I mean, like I said, I haven't heard, I mean, you've got the Nirvana-isms, but you're not a Nirvana-like band. Like, you're not what Airborne is to AC/DC. Like,
yeah,
seriously.
Like, we definitely make that a point. And I think, you know, we have our influences and our influences will shine, but we don't want to ever sound like any other band. We want to sound like us.
Yeah.
You know, we want to sound like Siddhartha, and that's what we do. That's, you know, a culmination of everything we're into, like, you know, everything. Like, everything we like, you know, we just blend it all together and make what we make.
Yeah. And the nice thing is that, just like the bands in the past, you guys don't take yourselves completely seriously, and obviously neither do I.
Yeah, no, like, it's definitely, that's the thing, like, you know, we don't take the music itself seriously in the context of, like, you know, writing and all that kind of thing, but on our own, we just get to have fun. That's the big thing about
I take the relationships I make seriously, but, like, I don't take myself seriously, because...
Yeah.
You're sitting here saying that what an honor this is for you, and I'm just sitting here drinking a Guinness stout in the dark at my kitchen table downstairs, while my wife is making crafts upstairs, nerding with a musician about music for like an hour and talking about their band that I love dearly and shit. Like, that's the kind of shit I do on a daily. Like, for me, like, you know... To be at the level where I'm at now, it's, like, still hitting me in the face that, like, hey, you know, my friend request is going off the freaking hook lately, too, because Rage Breed's about to launch next month. And
that's awesome. Congratulations, man.
That's a UK magazine I write for that's,
yeah.
You know, and there's profits to be made for all the writers. So, I mean, that'll be a new step for me. That's another notch. But this literally came from, like I said, 2020. I started in 2010. So this whole decade that's about to end, I've been slaving, and now I'm starting to see a little bit of fruit.
And that's, you know, that's the thing, man. It's hard work. You got working at it. Just, you know, it's not just going to happen overnight. And that's the thing.
And it's funny, my editor tells me all the time, you find some of the most off-the-wall, most bizarre shit from the deepest corners of the earth. But, you know, I do. I don't discriminate. A promoter over from Bangladesh told me that some people, especially in America, when they find out he's from Bangladesh, they ignore him and don't review the records. I'm like, man, you've sent me good music.
That's the thing, man. Like, you know, in any language, like, you know, anything, like, you hear it and you feel it, that's what matters. You know, you can feel what they're talking about.
This will sound awful, but there are certain countries that I didn't know existed until I got albums by bands from those countries.
Oh, wow.
But they're Eastern Europe, so as an American, I can't be blamed because we're not taught anything about the Eastern European world.
Yeah.
Like the country of Georgia. I thought the guy lived in the state of Georgia. But no.
Yeah.
It's this little country right underneath Russia, and I gotta say, I really feel for them. They were just about to be out of a third world status of a country, and we're about to get into NATO and everything, and Russia just started putting sanctions on them and shit. Like, oh, you're starting to do well? Nope.
Like, recently?
Yeah. Like, when my wife was giving birth to my newborn a couple months ago, I remember it because I was in the hospital and, you know, just passing time. And he invited me to this Facebook group that was all about his country and spend your summer in Georgia. And I asked him what it was about. And he said, we created that because, you know, this is what Russia's doing to us right now. So this was 5 months ago because my daughter's 5 months old now. So.
Congratulations on that, you know.
Thank you.
That's really great, you know. Like, definitely, you know, that's always, you know, having a father, that's just good as a race.
The oldest girl wants to go see Kiss this summer, and they're playing again right near us, even closer than the one show we went to for free. So we're trying to pull our resources and do that, because the day after my birthday, and her birthday's 5 days, or 10 days before mine. And I got her into Kiss, so it's their last tour, and people laugh at that, but they've only done, this is their second, quote-unquote, farewell tour, and they're pushing 70, and they're in 8-inch platform boots and, like, 20-pound stage gear. They can't do that for them. The Rolling Stones can do what they do, but Kiss can't do what Kiss can do at their age. You know what I mean? I have to give it to him for still doing it this long. You have to give it to him.
Amazing.
To be that old, to be doing that long, and that kind of, yeah.
Like, I mean, you talk about, you know, with, like, Rolling Stones and, you know, seeing, like, Keith Richards and Mick Jagger still moving like that at their age, like, wow.
But they're not wearing all the shit that Kiss wears. Nor are they putting on the kind of show that Kiss puts on that involves acrobat and it's so dangerous, it's choreographed, and it has to be, otherwise you'll blow your head off.
that's a stage show. Yeah, that's a big difference there. It's like, you know, they're doing a lot of insane stuff on stage like that, and being at their age, doing like that level of stuff.
But people fail to realize, and you know what, maybe it's because when I was 5 years old and I heard Kiss for the first time and it was a live record and I didn't even know what they looked like, I just heard what they sounded like, and literally from that day forward, I never looked back.
But
when you're a young kid and you hear the music and you like it, and then you go and find out what they look like, and you're 5, 6, 7, 8 years old, you know, they're real-life superheroes that play rock and roll music. With bombs and fire and spitting blood and breathing fire. It's everything you love as a kid. It's loud, obnoxious rock music that's really, really sexual that shouldn't be for kids, but for some reason, when you're not thinking of that, you know. But now when I'm riding in the car with my six-year-old and she's singing along to Christine 16, I'm cringing inside like, no, no! Yeah, but no, it makes me laugh, but they don't know any better. It's just music, you know? And that's fine. I don't ruin that, but it makes me laugh because I'm like, oh, wow.
Yeah, it's just the thing. Like, you think back even as a kid, where we're like, singing it, like, you know, back into the, you know, when I was younger, my dad was into, like, you know, a lot of the, you know, old, like, you know, 80s, 90s hip-hop and R&B and stuff like that, and, like, you know, sing along to, like, you know, Boyz II Men songs, and, like, then finding out when you're older with the song with the mouth, you know, like, oh. I was, like, 6 years old singing this. What was I doing?
I mean, I was brought up on hair metal and stuff, but, like, neither of my parents liked Black Sabbath, so my rebellion when I was young was getting into bands that they didn't like. One of them was Black Sabbath. My dad liked Ozzy Solo, but didn't like Black Sabbath. He thought it was druggy music. My mom thought it was druggy music. But then the next day when I put on Machine Head by Deep Purple, she comes in, oh, I used to have this record. I was so confused.
Oh, wow.
I'm still confused by that. Deep Purple's not drug music, but Black Sabbath is?
Yeah, pretty much.
They both are.
Acid rock. He's called acid rock for a reason.
Yeah, literally, I got the song Remains the Same 2-disc edition, and there's, like, a news clip from back in Tampa, back in, like, 73 or something, and the newscaster's like, Led Zeppelin's popular with the acid rock crowd. I'm like, can you imagine
you know, you're writing really intricate music, and they're calling it acid rock and passing it off like, eh, you know.
Oh my god. That's the thing, man. Yeah, like, you know, especially, you know, really, especially back then, it was, like, extremely intricate. Like, that was...
To play a double-neck guitar with a 12-string and a 6-string and to use both things on live on Stairway to Heaven, I can't even play a fucking 12-string because it's just too much.
Exactly. I mean, shit, like, well over now, like, a 6-string...
Even a 5-string bass throws me off. It's too much. You don't need all that. 7-string guitar pissed me off. I tried that out once.
I'll do punk rock for this. I'll do punk for this.
That must be what it is, man. Like, literally. It just feels like too much. I'm not saying playing a 12-string is too much. I'm just saying, for me, it makes my mind just go, what?
Yeah, exactly. Like, sometimes you see, like, people playing, like, and you're just like...
Jimmy Page is one of the most amazing guitar players ever because he could just play anything, man. But
exactly.
I can't.
Yeah, like, I mean, you know my music, man. Like, I'm pretty basic, simple talk.
What's really funny is there's people who love the shit I play and think it's so intricate, but it's really punk rhythms with shredding CC DeVille-like guitar solos. I don't write anything. I don't know scales. I have no training. I only know one way to play. And everything I play has a bit of that punkiness in it. A guy I was jamming with a couple years ago told me, I like that everything you play, it has that punky nature. It keeps it fun. I'm like, that's what I do. I don't even try it. It just is. I'm just a shitty guitar player that can do fancy tricks. You know?
Well, that's definitely good, dude. Like, it's just always good to actually have that core to things, and then, you know, actually building off of that core is fucking cool.
I mean, even though I can go from, like, punky stuff and play stoner doom and, like, other types of music, that doesn't mean I'm any better of a guitar player.
Right.
It's just doing the same types of movements in different ways. I have been trying to learn scales, and I'm learning from a guy who's in a surf rock band called the Surf Zombies, which I adore.
Oh, nice.
Dude, I can't even hold the fucking pick the way he described it. I feel like a retard.
Damn,
like,
man,
I feel
like
a straight-up dribble lip drooling on myself. And I'm like, I've been doing this since I was 9. What do I do? You know? Because it's a completely different style. You have to hold the pick, like, in between your, like, index finger knuckle and your thumb. So that way you can do that really fast, like, without, like, giving yourself carpal tunnel.
Like, the riffing kind of stuff?
It's basically black metal style riffing without the distortion.
Yeah, like,
so
like a tremolo kind of thing.
Yeah, like, to be able to do that without, it's just...
By holding the pick between your...
Like, right at the knuckle of your index finger and your thumb. Like, you kind of have to do it like that and keep the rest of your fingers free. You know what I mean? So, kind of like an open hand in a really awkward position to hold a pick.
Okay, I'm going to have to figure this out. Because there's some things that like, I should be bringing the Asian orange and stuff like that.
He sent me a video explaining it. I can try to find that and send that to you so you can just watch him telling you because I'm probably telling you how to do it wrong.
I can definitely learn how to do that. Because, like, at a certain stage, but I was like, I really wish I could fix this way in a certain spot. Like, okay, I can't get this strumming pattern right, and I don't know what I'm doing.
I almost feel like I'd be better off doing that style of stuff if I had, like, the hand thimbles. And played my guitar like a fucking banjo.
Oh my god.
I feel like I could do better at that because I can play bass pretty well. But I don't know, I'm no Steve Harris because that's what I'd have to do. Like, my fingers.
Oh man.
But it's that punk rock ethics that always come into play, which really punk rock is just over loud 50s rock, which is where it all started. So, I mean...
Exactly.
I mean, the MC5 were more than not influenced by Chuck Berry, and if you're not familiar with the MC5, I highly recommend them.
Oh, I definitely got MC5, definitely. Check out the jams, hell yeah.
And obviously, definitely. You know the New York Dolls, because I think you pointed out that.
Of course. Your name, you know, Annie Thunders, well, Johnny Thunders, I definitely got New York Dolls.
It was never meant to try to steal anything. It was literally a tribute to someone that I feel is one of the best guitar players of the last 50 years and one of the best songwriters and overall musicians that influenced everybody that never got their just due. Another one I really like is Rocky Erickson. He was in the 13th Floor Elevators and stuff, which I'm sure you're familiar with the name, but that poor guy... Oh, man. He recently passed away this past year as well, but he was, he lived in Texas, and he was in the 13th Floor Elevators, which were a psychedelic rock band, so obviously being in Texas in the late 60s and that kind of band. Back then, he got busted for marijuana possession and was sentenced, facing a possible 10-year prison sentence. He got out of it by pleading insanity, but was given involuntarily electroshock therapy for years, so it fucked his brain wiring up.
And when was this? What era was this?
The '60s and seventies.
Oh,
the guy was making records in the '70s, in between like being committed, like in between bouts of being committed and stuff. So he wrote this really honest, but. Dark and quite, he's like the American Sid Barrett, if you will. You know what I mean? Sid Barrett from Pink Floyd, one of the acid casualties. But yeah, I'll have to send you some of his stuff if you're not familiar, because...
Yeah, definitely. Like, I mean, I've heard of British Blue Elevators and I've that, but I've never got super heavily into them. The name of the band sounds familiar.
Yeah. Like I said, they're from Texas, so, I mean, if you ask around, I'm sure someone will remember them. But, I mean... Those two people alone, between Johnny Thunders and Rocky Erickson, both actually reshaped rock and roll, and hardly anybody knows who the hell they are.
Yeah, that's the sad thing about that. I mean, I'm heavily into the Texas folk band, and then, you know, of course, you know, you're involved in the Heartbreakers and everything, like, you know, knowing that, you know, while I'm knowing that shit was Malcolm McLaurin, through the Near Adult, or just Sweetie, through every other band he played with ever, or managed ever.
Every band Malcolm McLaren got involved with, he fucked over.
Pretty much. I mean,
for the sake of himself. I mean...
Wow.
Well, I mean... Yeah, some people say that him and Johnny Rotten are the same type of people, and that's why they butted heads. No, they weren't.
No. Definitely not. Like, that's the one thing... I mean, I didn't talk about it today.
They always say that's the one thing they regret, is replacing Glenn with Sid and not getting rid of Malcolm, because they probably would have done more music.
Yeah, most likely. That's the thing. I mean, I don't know.
Like, and that record still is one of the most goddamn raw, unnerving things I've ever heard that still gets me pumped, but it's such driving rock, really. Simple, stripped down. Ugh. And Johnny's voice back then. My God, that record changed my life, man.
Yeah, same here.
100%. Like, after that, it was the Dead Kennedys, the Misfits, and Nirvana, and skateboarding, and stoner metal, and here I am.
That was, for me, the first couple bands, like punk bands, whatever, you know, I guess it's kind of cliche, whatever, like that. But, like, the first few that I got into were, Rancid, Casualties, Sex Pistols, The Clash, and...
Everybody in my grade thought punk rock was Green Day, so I'm not going to sit here and call you a poser or think that's stereotypical, because the Ramones, the Sex Pistols, the Misfits are like the holy trinity where everybody kind of starts when they get into punk.
Yeah.
I went deep into English punk. I think English punk, other than, like, I like proto-punk, I like the Ramones, I like Richard Hell, but then I like the English punk.
Yeah, well, yeah, Richard Hell.
I don't really care for much U.S. punk, quote-unquote.
Yeah, a lot of it, you know, like, the vibe was just so different. Like, I mean, like, I can like a lot of,
I love the Stooges, I love the MC5, but I'm not a big fan of the American punk bands. You know, I like the Dead Kennedys. That's probably one of the last ones. I'm not really big into hardcore punk.
Right. Yeah, for me, like, the hardcore, like, pretty much up until round 82. Started kind of, it became kind of like their whole, like, I guess the cliche word for it is, like, you know, the Jocks and punk rock kind of mentality.
Yeah, everybody was trying to be Black Flag or Minor Threat.
Yeah, it became kind of, like, repetitive in that way. But before that, it's like, you know, it's like,
I fucking hate street punk music. I can't really listen to street punk anymore. Like,
yeah.
I really liked bands like Crass, Chaos UK, The Partisans, you know, The Sex Pistols, The Damned, The Clash, all of the first wave English bands, Slaughter and the Dogs, oh my god, yes.
Yeah.
You know, X-Ray Specs. I didn't really care for, I liked The Addicts, but I didn't really care for, like, The Exploited and stuff like that, though. Like, there's
like
a cutoff point.
Like, a lot of, I guess, the UK 82 kind of stuff, but I like a lot of it, but, like, at the same time, so a lot of it I don't.
I mean, I know Chaos UK is probably lumped in there with, you know, The Exploited, but I think Chaos UK were more crusty, I think, than hardcore.
Yeah. Like, personally, like, I've always, like, been focused about, like, both Chaos UK and Exploited. And, Business, I like them a lot. At least I think I like
them. Oh, yeah, the Business were great.
Yeah, I've heard them forever.
Yeah.
But, like, a lot of oldie stuff, whatever. And, shit, like, I guess what I'm talking about is, like, I mean, I've checked out so much. Like, the big thing with that for me is, like, I like bands that take the genre and make it their own.
Me too.
So when you have a band that kind of, like, you know, it's like rehashing the same thing over and over again, I kind of get bored pretty quickly.
Like I said earlier, Airborne and AC/DC.
I'm sorry, I went something
real quick. No, it's okay. No, it's like Airborne and AC/DC, man. Like, it's the same kind of thing. You know,
yeah, like,
I mean, at least with the stoner doom bands, when they worship Sabbath, they still have their own sound. They're not, like, you know, trying to sound exactly like Sabbath.
That's the thing. Like, I mean, you know, like, you're into something, you know, that's cool, but don't let it define you. Define it. You're defining yourself.
That's everything in music, you know, like. You guys have your own style. It may be rooted heavily in grunge rock, without a doubt, and punk rock, without a doubt, but you guys sound like Siddhartha. You have...
Exactly, that's the important thing.
And I'll make sure... I sent you that Rocky Erickson album. I'll have to dig up the Pitch Black Sunrise Bandcamp for you. But, I'm just glad that, like I said, that you guys are... out there. I'm glad that you guys are making music.
Well, once again, I really, really appreciate that. It, you know, all the help that you give us, and, like, all the, you know, help that you, you know, that get us out there, like, just to get the music heard, and that means a whole lot. I can't even begin to try, like, really, like, any sort of, you know, help that you give is, like, greatly appreciated.
Yeah, I mean... I don't know what my pool is, but the worst thing that could happen is you could get big in another country before you got big in America, but that would be kind of cool. Because you'd come home and everything would still be normal. It wouldn't be like Beatlemania, so it wouldn't be quite so bad.
Yeah, that's the thing, man. Like, I mean, kind of, like, learn from the mistakes of your forefathers. Like, I don't want that. I don't want... At all.
Everybody,
like,
thinks that
know.
Anybody who gets in a band wants to be a rock star. That's not the case. And they say, well, if you don't want to get rich and famous, what are you doing it for?
Well, gee, there's more than getting rich and famous, but that just shows the simple-mindedness of most people.
Exactly. Like, that's just the thing. Like, it's kind of like just paying attention. You know, like, what happens to those people? Like, where do they go? Like, what happens with them? Like, why would you want that? Like, why would you want to live your life basically constantly being hounded and surrounded by everybody and everybody wanting to be in your business? Like, why, I don't want that.
Yeah, and that's one thing I refuse to do as a journalist is be a tabloid. Like, I don't write for the National fucking Enquirer. I'm a rock journalist.
Yeah, that's good. That's definitely good. And this is the thing, too, man. You're, like, you're more, like, raw and real. Like, it's like a conversation with a friend. Not, like, you know, like I'm getting interviewed, but I'm just talking to somebody.
Well,
yeah, it's cool.
I mean, that's really how it's supposed to be. Music is a living, breathing entity. Music is more than just music. So, like...
Exactly. It's life. That's the thing. It's
living
like,
art.
Art is like that cliche thing, you know? It's true. It's art, you know? And in that case where like that, it's like, you know, there are people. There is people making the art. Like, it's not like a god in any way. You know, you can live up to them, you can be inspired by them, but they're people. And that's a lot, like, you know, at least if you get mainstream in that case, like, what the typical mindset of that is like, they're above us somehow. They're not, they're just people. Like,
yeah, I mean, that's the thing you gotta remember, and people always say, like, how do you get the access you do? For some reason, I just have the balls to ask a question with the utmost respect and politeness, and it seems to get me pretty damn far.
Exactly, it's like, you're talking to a person, you're not talking
to
a
god. The worst they could do is say no. The worst they could do is say no.
Exactly. So it's like... And then, you know, it's like, you know, you talk about the journalists, like, yeah, the rock stars got pissed off. Like, well, then, you know, they're going to get pissed off because they're assholes, one, or they're getting pissed off because they're prying into their personal business. You know,
yeah. I mean, you know, there's a quote by Lester Bangs that I live by. I don't do this to help a record company sell records. I do this to help people find records.
Like, that's a perfect mindset for it. Definitely.
So... whether it's a Funeral Doom record from out of the country of Georgia, a black metal record out of the country of Belarus, a heavy metal band from Turkey that sounds like Iron Maiden meets Dio in a back alley on the back of a freaking rainbow in the dark, you know, if it's good and it's worth something, I'll do it. The latest Quiet Riot record, I guarantee you, you'll read a bunch of people shitting on it because it's not Quiet Riot. I'm sorry that the lead singer died of a cocaine overdose and the drummer got the blessing from the singer's mom to carry on the band that he helped build and bring to superstardom. Sorry.
Exactly.
When you look at it from the value and you understand that it's going to be just a basic old school melodic hard rock record, you can look at it a lot differently than another Quiet Riot record.
Exactly. That's the big thing. You know, it's like, and that's how it started too, I guess. Like, you know, musicians in general, they grow. You know, they change. I mean, of course, you have, like, other ones that kind of stuck to that thing, like the Ramones, that pretty much, you know, over the 30 years that they were doing things, stayed the Ramones.
This might sound laughable to you, but Quiet Riot earned their spot because they were the first heavy metal band to actually have a number one album on the Billboard 100 charts. And that's pretty admirable. I mean, the Metal Health record, if you go past Come On, Feel the Noise, it's actually a really heavy record. Much like how Shout at the Devil was. Yeah, there's this... I'll send you a track or two that you will never hear on the radio that they still perform live, but you ever hear the saying that the deep cuts are the best?
No, definitely.
Okay, well, that's the case with a lot of these bands.
Okay, cool.
You know, Come On, Feel the Noise was a cover, too. They didn't want to do it. They had never played the song before, did it in that first take and released it, and it helped propel the album to number one. Isn't that, they didn't try it. The drummer even said, Kevin was like, you know, they just came up with a simple arrangement. They'd never played it before. They weren't fans of it. They didn't want to do it. They thought the record company would just be like, oh, okay, never mind. But no, they released the first take and it was a hit.
Damn.
and it wasn't a hit for the band that originally did it, Slade.
I guess it's kind of like with like Hendrix doing along the Lush Tower.
Yep. But damn. Honestly, like, maybe it's because I love Bob Dylan, but the simplicity and the intensity of Bob Dylan is all down to, you just have to really open your mind to Bob Dylan, and you either get it or you don't. It's more or less what he's saying, but, like, Masters of War by Bob Dylan's the greatest protest song that was ever written, and it's so goddamn angry, and it was written in 63 before a lot of the protest songs were coming in the 69 era, you know. That's what people forget. Yes, he was saying the same things people were saying, but he was saying those things way before.
Exactly.
He wrote Blowin' in the Wind in 63, and that's a civil rights type song.
Right.
You know, how many roads must a man walk down before you can call him a man? That's literally talking about the Civil Rights March.
Right.
But
exactly, man. That's the thing. Like, you know, I mean, shit, that was like around, in 63, that was like around the assassination of Kennedy.
Yeah.
So it's like, I mean, seeing it at that point in time, that, that's, really igniting, like a protest song, it's really starting to ignite something, like, really seeing, what's going on and actually speaking about it. And, that probably helped, too. That's the thing. Music has that kind of power. That's the thing. Like, think about, our era, you and I are, close to the same age, right? That, think about back in, the early 2000s, after 9/11, and, Bush's wars and everything like that.
Yeah.
Had
I was in fourth grade when the towers were hit. I mean, I'm not going to get into what I believe actually happened, but I remember being in fourth grade in my classroom hearing about it. So I grew up with that. Let's just say that was one final nail in my childhood innocence.
Pretty much. Yeah, that's the thing. Seeing what happened over those years. I was like in 2014. Like, I was like a teenager and I had that, and seeing everything going on after that point, it really shaped. I mean, it's like our, just part of our generation, I guess you could say. It shaped, like, our mindset towards, like, the political landscape, for sure.
Well, because I was a younger child throughout the 90s, but everything I remember about the 90s maybe is in rose-tinted glasses, but I don't remember a lot of problems like that in the 90s until... The turn of the new year and the turn of the century and all that, that's when everything just started going downhill. When Bon Jovi did the album Crush, that's when I knew it wasn't going to be a good time.
Which one?
Crush.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, there's some songs on that record I like, but, it's not... Just that was one sign for me as a kid beyond others. That was a really bad time for hard rock and metal music, too.
Right.
Because if you weren't a white boy with a backwards hat with a name like Limp Bizkit, then they didn't want you.
Yeah. Like, I think what did it with me... Because I can think of that point in time or kind of thing, like, shit. Like, I think back to, kind of the protest song in general, System of a Down.
Yeah, I like System of a Down. They were one of the few bands out of that era I actually really liked, and still do.
Yeah, there's quite a few that I personally liked. Like, of course, Korn, I like them a lot.
Korn, I listened to them when I was really young and in a really dark, unstable place. And they're really hard for me to listen to because I listen to a lot of other extremely dark, suicidal shit, but I'm not really... I've never been a fan of the mixing of rap and metal, or rap and rock. It's not anything against either one genre. They're great on their own. I'm just, if I want to rock, I don't want to hear some whiny guy rapping about how it's his way or the highway.
Right. I can understand that. Yeah, I can understand that. Like, because a lot of stuff was, I kind of felt that way with certain...
And the punk rock songs about the destroyed teenage youth, those are anthems. I don't really think Korn's Freak on a Leash really, anthems like that are anthems, but they're not, I don't know.
They're just not the same, so to speak. Maybe it's the musical styling. You get older, your tastes change, but I cannot really, you know, the most I listen to Korn is I might play the song Blind out once in a blue moon. You know, and then,
like,
or Chutes and Ladders, and then I'm good.
Time.
I'm just, I don't know.
Yeah, like at the time, because we're like being, you know, the 14-year-old, like, you know, pissed off kid, and it spoke to me at that point in time.
I shifted, I spent a little bit of time in the new metal thing, because it was extreme, and I was brought up on classic rock, so to go from something like that to Slipknot was a shock to my parents' system to begin with.
Yeah.
But the reaction I got to my mom walking in on Bodies by the Sex Pistols was enough to, you know, you know, Last Caress by the Misfits or Holiday in Cambodia by the Dead Kennedys.
Oh, man.
Some really, like...
I was 16 and lived in my room like that and listened to, T.I.
Yeah.
In the song. Richard Kill Himself. Richard Kill Himself, whatever. He, you know, my grandmother walked in to my room, I was playing that, and the person's face turned this, like, completely ghost white. Like, why are you listening to this?
My mom walked in on the part of Bodies. I've got two funny stories like that, but the Sex Pistols one where my mom walked in, I was listening to Bodies, alright? And it literally got to the part where it was like, fuck this and fuck that, fuck it all, the fucker
fucking
Brett. She don't want a baby that looks like that. I don't want a baby that looks like that. I'm not an animal. I'm an abortion. And she just had this horrified look on her face, which I'll never forget. I broke her hippie little heart that day. And then... And then I remember I was... I started a new school my freshman year. And, teacher has, you know, introduced yourself in the beginning of the year school thing, you know. I'm Andy and I like punk rock. Oh, huh. Well, maybe you should bring some in tomorrow for all of us to enjoy together. Are you serious? Yeah. Okay. I'm thinking, all right, I'm going to make an impression. So I made this little, you know, I made a tape because I had one of those cassette recorders that I'd record my shitty guitar work on. And also worked as a tape Walkman. And had a playing speaker that when you unplugged the headphones, everyone could hear also what you were listening to. I literally put Forward to Death by the Dead Kennedys on that tape. And I was listening to it, and I made sure that I put it at just the right part. So I brought it in, and, you know, I'm like, yep, okay, so here's some punk rock. This is Forward to Death by the Dead Kennedys.
Oh.
And it started playing, and it's going, and it's really fast, and people are looking uncomfortable, but, you know, they're like, okay. And then, you know, they hear Jello Biafra, I don't need this fucking world. I don't need this fucking world. It just brings me down. And he's like, that's enough. They used to nickname me the Target and Freedom Fighter because I literally was that kid. Like, I've never gotten legal trouble other than having tobacco products on school property, but, you know.
I mean, the worst thing that happened to me at that point in school, whatever like that, I mean, around that point, I was actually, went to a Christian school for, actually, kindergarten job in 10th grade. And at that point in time, you know, like, the whole new metal thing was pretty big, and that's, you know, kind of my first, like, real dive into, like, harder, you know, music in general, whatever, and me and my friend were actually just, like, blasting out of the cars in a car, and I was supposed to be in school, and we were just listening to music instead, and one of the teachers saw me out there, this head thing was rocking out, my friend Wes, and she comes over, swings open the car door, grabs me by the shirt collar, and drags me back into the school. And then she's like, Sherry, I go, you stay here. You listen to Paul say, panic music. You stay here and you keep up what you're doing. I'm like, oh my God.
That's hilarious. I remember when I lived with my foster parents, I used to skip my gym class, and I'd go up to Rutter's and get a coffee and have a cigarette. And my guidance counselor came to me one day, and she goes, if you're going to skip class, don't have your hair like that, because I had a mohawk. What do you mean? I'm like, huh? What are you talking about? She's like, I saw you yesterday smoking a cigarette with a cup of coffee up at Rutter's, and you were supposed to be in gym class. I'm like, oh, shit. I'm like, you didn't say anything, did you? Because, like, I'll, like, have whatever privilege I... Well, no, I don't really have any privileges. Never mind. You can't take nothing from me. She's like, don't worry. But don't do it again. For some reason, as much of a rebel and as much of a weirdo as I was, for some reason, there were some that really liked me, some that really didn't. And that's okay. I question things, and I always have. And when you question everything, people don't tend to like that when they're in positions of power.
Oh, man. Hey, I'm trying to picture this whole, like, scene. It's like, what color was your mohawk? Like, dye color? Or was it just, like, your...
It was turquoise. It was bleach blonde. I went from brown to bleach blonde, and I shaved it into a mohawk, and then I sloppily dyed it turquoise with, like, manic panic. Yeah, and an old hippie jean jacket with punk bands written in Sharpie all over it. You couldn't miss it.
Oh, wow. At that point in time, it's still my natural color. But I guess, what year was this for you when this happened?
Right around, like, in between 2008 and 2010.
Oh, wow. 2010. Around that point in time, I had... Okay, that was actually for me. I was actually heavy in the pump at that point. I had a, 2010. I had a, like, mostly short, blonde and spiky. I had a shaved band down to my skin on the side of one, where on the other side, off center, had a tall, bright mohawk.
Yeah, you definitely would stand out.
Yeah, that was.
And it's funny, too, because you're from the South, and I'm from a small town in Pennsylvania, and I live in upstate New York, which neither one is anywhere near anywhere where normal people would accept that kind of dressing style.
Yeah, this was, around that point, this is like a southern town, like in Virginia, like a suburban area, and I could not walk down the street without having someone shouting Kennedy at me. Oh man, back in the day. But this is kind of crazy thing this day and age too. Like, you kind of see, how things are shifting in a weird way. Like, the things that I used to, get threatened about wearing, the tight skinny jeans, like ripped up skinny jeans.
Yeah.
Oh, now,
dude. Oh my God, it's like talking to myself in a different form. Holy shit. It makes me laugh when all these little young punks or young scene kids are like, people always judge me for the way I look. And I'm just like, is this your first time?
Pretty much.
First time, huh? Yeah.
Pretty much. It's like, dude.
Dude, I look like basically a white version of Jesus Christ, and people still look at me like I'm the devil.
That's the
Okay, so yep. I might as well just keep doing what I'm doing, because no matter what I do, I'm the devil in your eyes. Okay.
Pretty much splash your horns, then. Splash the horns. Freak them out more, might as well.
Yeah, I don't have the tail either. They at least chopped that off at birth.
How did you do with the cloven hooks?
Those are a secret, damn you. No, it's funny because it's like these people shit their pants over a bad word on a Dead Kennedys album. They don't even know who Gigi Allen is.
Oh my God. Yeah.
He's like the ICP of punk rock, really.
Pretty much. I mean, that's the thing, too. I actually think about it kind of funny. I think, it's not what he said straight up, but I think Kurt called that out in fucking the song in, what was it? Aerosmith one?
Yeah.
shit upon the stage, there'll be bands. I think you've talked.
You can shit upon the stage and there'll be fans. I think I don't know it. I don't know the history of GG that well because I don't care to get into it that much because the enough that I know makes me want to vomit.
Yeah,
I like Bite It, You Scum, and that's about where I go as far as I go.
Yeah.
But, like, I know that Kurt was probably, I always felt like in Aero Zeppelin, he was always talking about the mainstream commercial bands and the problems with it that we still have today. You could shit
yeah,
upon the stage
true.
And there'll be fans. You don't, you know.
Yeah.
And you swear it's not a trend, nothing new is every day. You know.
Right. So that's definitely, you know, like you said, too, it's still alive again. I only wonder if there will always be going on or not. I mean, I guess just the thing, like, I kind of agree in that way, you know, read that interview a while back with Dave Grohl, whatever like that. And what you said in that case, I kind of agree in the sense there's a place for that. You know, there's a place for that, you know, commercial, like, pop kind of, like, you know, kind of stuff or like that. But when that's all there is, yeah, that's when it becomes a problem. I think there's something else out there as far as a, you know, like, a, you know, visible mainstream kind of consciousness or like that. There's nothing out there now that has anything else other than this commercial kind of stuff. Like,
well, it's. I use an analogy that Nikki Sixx used to describe two of Motley Crue's actually, ironically, biggest records when he was really into heroin in the 80s. When they did Theater of Pain and Girls, 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 he even said, looking back, that the songs that they were writing at the time, they were making records like McDonald's makes hamburgers. And that's probably a good analogy to use on how the commercial mainstream has been running for, like, as long as I've been alive, and even before that.
They are really the past, like 15 years, at least as far as a,
everything's stagnated. Everything's the same. There's nothing.
Yeah.
Nothing. I mean, my wife's like, oh, you know, there's this band called Highly Suspect. They're new. They're really good. They're not bad, but they're not really that new. I mean, they're
yeah.
new, but their style isn't. It's
just this thing, like their rehashed kind of concept. It's like, I don't know, man. Like,
and people say that Stoner Doom can be formulaic, but I mean, everything, every type of music is formulaic.
Well, yeah, of course.
But it's just
I mean,
a matter. Like, I see Stoner Doom as like the finest Merlot mid-century wine deep in the catacombs of a cellar. You know, if heavy metal was a wine, it would be the finest, because it's not based on any commercial standpoint, it's based on pure art, you know?
Exactly, that's the big thing. Like, I mean, like, I think really what's happening right now, as far as, you know, it is going to be a backlash, there has to be. Like, that's just the thing, it's a cycle, it tends to always be a cycle.
Why does it seem like it's taking longer for this one to cycle out? Because the punk didn't take long to take over the prog bands, which were offshoots of
yeah.
the psychedelic bands. Something
yeah,
should have happened by now. Why hasn't it?
I mean, theoretically speaking, you know, I just kind of like blame pretty much like the internet, really, at least in the differences between what's going on then and you know, 15 years ago. Like everything.
Oh yeah, it was so limited back then. People don't realize. Dial up internet, having to wait 30 minutes to hear a 15-second song clip to preview a new album. Like, there was no downloading even when I first got on the PC. It would have taken years.
Yeah, I can remember when the first time I ever watched the video online, my grandmother was just showing me a quick clip, like a 5-second, 10-second clip. Of a building down in here in downtown Richmond being basically blown up, or
yeah.
being torn down and everything. And that little 15-second clip took like 6 hours.
Yeah, and it's not exaggerating. That's so we were the last generation to have any kind of, you know,
mm-hmm.
I experienced music at 14. I had an old 70s stereo set up with an 8-track player and a turntable and everything. And I started collecting records at the age of 14. So I had more of an old school oriented upbringing by my own choosing because I love music so much. And what better way to immerse yourself fully into music than having a vinyl? Most of my best years spent, you know, growing up as a teenager was learning to play the guitar, playing guitar with my friends, and just sitting there for hours and listening to, you know, Dark Side of the Moon for the first time with the original vinyl on the posters and the stickers and the inserts. And it, when you have a CD or you have a digital download, even worse, there's none of that.
Right.
None.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, I think...
Well, it's slow going, but vinyl's coming back. With vinyl coming back, that's a good sign.
I saw an article that was saying that this is the first time since the 80s that the vinyl has outsold CDs.
Yeah, and that's a great sign. That is a great sign.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the first good news that any kind of musician can possibly have.
I think something is going to happen now. I mean, you said it's taking longer, and I definitely agree there. It's taken way longer than before.
I really hope it's not my scene that explodes, because if it explodes, it'll ruin it.
Which one?
The Doom.
Oh, Doom, yeah. I think
I love Doom. I'll support Doom till the grave, but I don't want it to go mainstream like that.
Like a mainstream recognition, like the masses in that kind of case. Like what typically people seem to want to hear is something that has hooks, something that has like something that they can, you know, catch along to.
Stoner Doom doesn't have any of that.
Do what?
Stoner Doom doesn't really have hooks. They got riffs.
Exactly. A lot of riffs are like that, and they can manage to, like, if somebody could come that comes out and manages to actually have something that I get, you know, it's implemented, some sort of catchy hook to it, then I can imagine it going there. And unless it happens, I don't really know, because,
well,
you know,
I mean, there
has to be like a melody that people, like, this is more of the mainstream costumes have.
Yeah, I mean, I was just about to say, well, Black Sabbath didn't really have hooks, but then Paranoid was probably the only reason why Black Sabbath got big. And that wasn't even something they even tried to do. But, I mean, even that, the only hook's the guitar, really. The guitar riff is the hook in that song. So,
that's basically it, yeah.
I've always said that bands like Led Zeppelin could not exist today. Because the stuff that they did musically just, you couldn't do in today's climate. You could not write a song like Stairway to Heaven and have it be a hit. Or No Quarter. You know what I mean?
That's the kind of the sad thing, I guess, you know, when you think about, like, you, of course, you know, it's a great, amazing song in general, and, you know, but, like, you think, I guess, if, you know, going to musical history, kind of stuff like that, like, that was, you know, in, like, the 60s, like, 70s or like that, like, that was, like, the climate of almost everything at the time. Like, it was, like, these intricate, deeply, you know, like, that you had to have, like, a...
But it was raw, and it wasn't overproduced, either.
Right.
The 8-track or 24-track recorder was like a huge fucking deal.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. That's the thing with that point in time of that era. That's why punk kind of ended up basically like doing that, taking over, because everything was so intricate. And here these people come along with this simplistic, angry, you know, like, also in any way you can play it. And I think that's what, you know, got the kids to go to those. And that's, I think it's another issue today, whereas, you know, it has its benefits and it has its, you know, I mean, we couldn't record for technology today. Like, it would just be too expensive for us to ever really record anything. But, like, now, because, you know, we have, like, the ability to record on my damn phone, I can record it now. You know, I guess that's a benefit. You know, it's like a,
that's a great thing, like, though, at the same time for underground musicians, but with the instant gratification of this era, nobody's going to take the time to learn and practice a guitar.
And that's difference. Like, then you have the ones that are taking that technology and making, just looping a beat, and looping a sample, and looping...
And calling themselves a musician in the process.
It loses its soul at that point. After it becomes, like, you know, the sampling nonstop, and you're not really making anything. Like, you're just, like, you're just repeating something. You're not playing it, you're just repeating it. And then it's like, this is what's going on today. And I think, I mean, the technology itself isn't necessarily the problem. Because, like I said, like, I'm able to, like, I don't, like, loop it, anything really. Like, when you hear, like, a Starza recording, I'm playing a guitar the straight way through. There's sort of, like, you know, I'm not taking a riff and then repeating it. I'm playing it the whole way song. It's pretty much live.
And that's how it's supposed to be done.
Yeah. Track by track, but it's not playing it straight way. There's no repeating. So, that's available now. It's definitely, you can use it in that way and still create something with soul to it. But I feel like once you're using that technology and letting it just do everything, that's when you're losing the art of it. It becomes a product and not an art form anymore.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So we are going to wrap this up here. This is the longest interview I've done to date, and it's not a problem.
I'm
enjoying
it.
No, you're fine. This is great. What are the next future plans for Siddhartha?
Well, I haven't really discussed it fully yet with Mello, and, well, can't really discuss anything with Manny. I think what I want to do is, we've been, you know, focusing on, like, releasing, like, pretty much something new every year. I think what I want to try to do now is actually kind of focus on, you know, of course, like, practicing a shit ton, but make some videos. I think it would be cool to do, like, you know, videos from our previous releases and, you know, some of the new releases and like that. And just, like, do some, you know, some actual videos for a while.
Yeah, that would be great for promotion and, you know, stuff like that, no doubt.
Yeah. I think that'd be pretty fun. Just, like, and when you focus more on, like, you know, getting the songs we have now, because, like, I mean, right now, this is like any music I've ever done. We have the most songs I've ever written, like in any other previous band. Like, we've got a lot. And I feel like we need to focus on what we have before we start doing more new.
Yeah. I mean, you've got quite a decent catalog for a young band, so, you know.
Yeah. So, like, that practice, and get and start playing some more live gigs. Like, we definitely want to do that. Like, we need to focus more on that. I need to get out of my shell. That's the big thing there. I need to get out of my damn shell.
You don't have to get out of your shell. Just fucking play, man. You don't have to say a word in between songs. Who gives a shit? Just put on some sunglasses and disassociate enough just to get through it, man. You'll be fine.
Pretty much. That's been how I've been existing for the past, like, year.
Yeah, I mean, how do you think I get through a work day?
Pretty much.
I disassociate myself just enough. Ah, mental illness.
Just basically stay conscious enough to, you know, get through the day, and then,
yeah.
So, of course, in that case, like that, you know, you mentioned this a single clip too, like, no, this shameless plug kind of thing, as you say, but you mentioned, like, the hearing the growth between of us from, you know, Heavy Sound Damage to now, like, you know, like, I was going to have an amazing girlfriend that really pushes me and drives me to do better. That's where a lot of that growth has come from. It's been, you know, with her actually, you know, pushing me to be my best, to do my best, and actually helping me big time constantly, and I'm really appreciative of her.
Oh, yeah. Supportive partner can be amazing. You have no idea.
Oh, definitely. Like, especially as a musician, like, you having somebody there that actually, you know, encourages you rather than it makes you feel like you're, you know, a grown adult still playing these games, like, no, why are you doing this? No. Having someone that supports you and actually wants you to be your best, it's great.
Oh, yeah. And one more thing I ask everyone, what do you love about music?
The most for me is the emotion. that what matters to me the most when it comes to the unit itself is actually feeling this person's heart and soul speaking through whatever instruments they're playing. You know, like, that's the most important thing about music, definitely. The soul of it.
The living, breathing entity.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Most definitely.
Well, all right, man. This was a lot of fun. We definitely got to do this again sometime. Keep me in the loop. Keep me posted. This should be up within anywhere between a couple days and a couple weeks. So, I mean,
okay, cool.
I'll let you know. And, yeah, man, keep on doing you. And I'm looking forward to what's next for Siddhartha myself.
Yeah, you too, man. Looking forward to, you know, seeing more of your interviews. And, you know, I really appreciate this again. Thank you so much. You have a lot of great things happening for you now, and, you know, I wish the best. Like, you're going to do amazing, man.
Thanks, man. And, you know, hey, if it weren't for people like you, I wouldn't be doing this.
I really appreciate that.
All right, man. Well, have a good night. Cheers.
Yeah, you too. Great talking to you, man.
All right, later.